Welcome to the Aquarimax Audio Show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 112, recorded May 7th, 2012.
Greetings, everyone!
Hello!
We have quite the show for you today, don't we?
Indeed. We are going to hear from Andreka and Tony in New York and Matthew, and have a report on your beta sorority.
Yeah, indeed. And Andreka had some questions about no-tech fish.
Oh, yes.
And we're going to assume for the purposes
Are they hippie fish?
What?
You know, they're off the grid.
Off the grid? Oh, okay, I see. Yeah, well, off the grid fish, that's the trick, isn't it? I mean...
Solar-powered fish?
Kind of depends on what you mean by no-tech, but if we assume, and I believe this was Andreka's definition of it, there were no filters and no heaters and
no lights.
Stuff like that. No aquarium lights. You know, you have light, but ambient room light or window light or you know, things like that. I guess there are several species that we could talk about. We did mention paradise fish and how that they were the first exotic fish kept, you know, with the exception of goldfish, which I guess at the time were exotic, they were the first ones to be kept.
When was that?
The Western world in the 1800s sometime.
Wow.
I think, right around there. It might have even been before that, but I think it was in the
1800s. Pity those
fish. Yeah. They didn't know
those people.
A whole lot about...
They didn't know how to keep people, let alone fish.
Well, some people knew how to keep people, maybe.
Not very many.
But...
Either they kept them in a corset or they kept them in a tenement.
Well,
neither of them are choices that I fancy.
Well, I agree with you there. But paradise fish are really, you know, their temperature is, they have a wide variety of temperature ranges that they can do with. Mm-hmm. So living in a house, they do pretty well.
Okay.
You don't need a heater.
Temperature range wise.
And their anabantoids breathe atmospheric air and so on. Of course, you need to keep water quality high with water changes. But so sometimes low tech. Without a filter means you have to change water more often than you would, or in larger quantities than if you did have a filter. But, you know, that's still it's a possibility. Bettas can do it if they're warm enough. And I guess this is sort of a recap because we talked about this last week, didn't we? Well, let's talk a little bit more about white cloud mountain minnows, though, because we did last week. We mentioned them.
Mm-hmm.
But I got to tell you this story.
Tell us
white cloud mountain minnows. I believe this is from Dr. Herbert Axelrod.
Is just such an awesome name for a fish doctor.
he mentioned...
he's kind of like nerd rock star look, you know? That's what that conjures up. Herbert Axelrod.
I think this was his book that talked about white cloud mountain minnows. I don't think the book was exclusively about them, but it was a section on them. And he said that, and I believe it was Germany, they have been called milk bottle fish.
Why is that? They kept
because
them in milk bottles?
People would put them on their windowsill... In a milk bottle with some plants, and they would breed in the milk bottle.
Wow.
So if that's not a low-tech fish, I'm not sure what is.
That's
a no-tech fish. I've never gone to that extreme exactly, but I have kept them in filterless tanks, and they've done fine.
And they're okay with lower temperatures.
They are. In fact, they're happiest in temperatures below, you know, 74 or so. If you keep them in the high 60s or low 70s, they're much more likely to spawn and continue spawning. And I think, did we mention that last week, how in Hawaii we kept them and we switched them?
I don't think you did. You should tell it now.
Maybe we did, though.
Tell it again!
Well, just really briefly, I had a tank in my office that was air-conditioned and a tank in our house that was not.
Painfully so.
And I had neons in my office and white clouds at home. And neither of them... Well, the neons spawned in my office fairly regularly, but the white clouds weren't spawning at home, so we switched them. And the white clouds started spawning like crazy, and pretty soon I had...
Because it was cooler.
50 fry in that tank. Just because it was cooler. Yeah. And the babies are absolutely brilliantly colored in the right light. They're like little sparks, living sparks.
Yeah, they're very pretty.
And they are just as bright as neon tetras, actually, when they're babies. As they get older, they kind of fade out a little bit, but... There you go. So that's
kind
a fun...
Kind of like people.
Fun no-tech fish.
Well, they get gray.
And common guppies are another one you can do. And this, I didn't mention this last week, but celestial pearl danios, I don't know if I would try them in a low-tech tank unless it were heavily planted so you could keep the water quality high.
They're a
And
little
you
bit
were
more
very
sensitive
careful
that
about
way.
that. I think they're a little more sensitive than some of these others, but as far as temperature goes, they do well at lower temperatures, like in the low 70s. They spawn lower 70s. You get too warm, they stop spawning. So I don't know that I'd really call them a low-tech fish just because you need to be careful with their water quality, but that might be a possibility. Maybe. If anyone else can think of any other low-tech or no-tech fish, there are others out there I'm sure we could mention, but those are some of the more common ones. And I hope that wasn't entirely recap. That was a little more detail in some of the other areas. So there you go. Let's go to our next one.
Tony in New York, he has cycling questions for us.
Yeah. Why don't you go ahead and elucidate?
Alrighty. He says, today I would like to ask you about fishless cycling since mine is a little slow to start. May I bounce this off of you? To which we say, Tony, bounce away. By which, of course, I mean, go ahead and bounce your questions off of us, not bounce yourself to a place further away from us. So he says, his first environment is a 20-gallon tank, black sand substrate, one aquarium ornament, three terracotta pots, no filter, air pump. Does he mean no filter and no air pump,
No.
or no filter but it does have an air pump?
From additional communications I've had with previous communications I've had with Tony, I know he means he has an air pump that is adding bubbles to the tank.
Okay, so yes, air pump, no filter.
Right.
And cycling has been going on for 48 days.
Pretty respectable period of time.
Are we dealing with that one first, or do you want me to read the other one too?
Go ahead and read
Okay.
environment two.
Environment number two. What's behind tank number two? It's a 1 gallon tank, a gravel substrate, one aquarium ornament, no filter, yes, air pump. Cycling has been going on for 42 days.
So this is a goodly while.
He's a lovely, patient person. Water conditions, he says, are stable at 8.2 and
Meaning
70
pH.
degrees, yes.
Yeah, 8.2 pH.
No water conditioner was added. Each tank has been fed with fish flakes for trace nutrients. Each tank was initially dosed with pure ammonia, made sure it was pure, to 4 parts. Is that ppm? Is that parts per
Parts per
million?
million, yeah.
Yay, I got the acronym right. The main tank seems very cloudy, and the bubbles at the water's surface hang around for a long time. This developed about 20 days in on the main tank. Both tanks get average daylight but are not in direct sunlight. No algae visible on either tank.
Okay. Yeah. Well, let's hear some of his other thoughts, and then we'll talk about it.
Okay, he says, both tanks are sealed fairly tight, save for the air hose entry point. I don't run the tank lighting, but haven't made an attempt to darken the tanks. Haven't added conditioner on the assumption that chlorine would go out of the water within 24 hours. Have added no water since the start of the cycling. Have not added much fish food. Temperature's a modest 70, which I'm sure has had an influence. I avoided seeding the tank to eliminate the chance of a surprise infection. I don't mind that fishless cycling takes some time, but that is kind of a long time.
Yeah, that is a fairly long time. And it can take a while, but it seems like at least you should start reading nitrites already. So.
He says about the state of the cycle, my aquarium pharmaceuticals kit has shown no nitrites or nitrates from either tank since I started testing, which I do about 3 times a week. Ammonia did drop to 1 part per million on the main tank. Oh, sorry, from?
No, that's what he means.
He
To
says
one part per million on the main tank.
to 1 part per million by day 32. Okay,
Yes, yeah.
so I dosed it back to 4 parts per million. I don't think it was bacteria though, since there were still no nitrites. Maybe it just evaporated. Says, do you have some thoughts for me? I am learning patience, so that is good. I am sure that my cycle is slowed by factors such as temperature. But since today is day 42 without evidence of progress yet, I think there might be something fishy going on.
And something fishlessy going on.
Something fishlessly, yes.
Yes. Well, I would like to commend Tony for his patience. That's
That
pretty amazing.
is, yeah.
And we'll talk a little bit about some of these things. One is that I do agree with Tony that the temperature is slowing things down. Some people will even increase the temperature in their tank to low 80s just to get it cycled because the bacteria reproduce more quickly at higher temperatures within reason, as long as there's enough oxygen and so on. So that could definitely be a factor. And though chlorine does dissipate without a conditioner, chloramine doesn't, at least
No,
not
it's
nearly as
chloramine.
quickly. It's basically a form of chlorine to which ammonia is chemically bonded. and that is often added to water supplies because, well, for a couple of reasons. One that I've heard cited is that it's supposedly safer than chlorine for humans. I don't know if I buy that or not, but that's one that I've heard. Another one is it doesn't dissipate, so that when you have water and warm temperatures in the summer, for example, chloramines are more stable in the water and tend to be better
at keeping bacteria. So they stay there, still treating the water, basically.
Yeah, they stay there instead of evaporating out.
Okay.
So that you can more effectively keep water clean and long term.
But that means that if it's in your fish tank, it's not dissipating either.
Right. And so you let it sit for 24 hours and the chloramines are still there. It may eventually degrade over time. I imagine it must sometime, but not anywhere near as quickly as chlorine in 24 hours aren't going to do it.
Okay.
So if his water source, Tony's water source, has chloramines, then, yeah, a water conditioner could be something that could help. Now, if the ammonia, besides this decrease that appeared on day 32, is remaining fairly stable, you might want to consider adding some bacterial additives to jumpstart the process. Seeding the tank from an existing aquarium does include some risk of infection, bacterial or parasitical or otherwise, but a commercial additive would probably be a lot safer. And if I were to add one, there are a lot of them out there, and as I understand it, some of them are bacterial additives along with added enzymes, and some are just bacterial additives, and, you know, there are different things going out there, but I would probably go with one that has a definite shelf life and, if possible, one that's sold refrigerated, because it's more likely to be the real McCoy.
So in the refrigerated ones, the bacteria are more likely to be viable?
That would be my feeling.
Okay.
You know, it may be possible that bacteria, I mean, they could survive quite a while without being refrigerated, but I would be more confident with the refrigerated one.
Which is funny, because don't we refrigerate our meat and things to prevent that?
Right. That sounds reasonable, too. I think it's just that this particular type of bacteria is... They're different than a lot. They're lithotrophic bacteria, which is different from heterotrophic bacteria.
What does lithotrophic mean?
They survive on... Basically, litho means stone, literally. But means they're surviving on very basic materials. They're not eating food in the sense that we think of as food.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the bacteria that live in our meat are eating food like the same kind of food we eat.
Right.
But these are eating ammonia, which is a very simple chemical. And they're using oxygen and so on to be able to extract a living from it. But so they're a different, sort of a different group of bacteria with certain different needs and so on.
Okay.
Like the need to attach to a substrate there, thus the all-important surface area, that kind of
surface
thing.
Surface area.
There are free-living heterotrophic bacteria.
We need to write a song about surface area.
We ought to. You know, one thing that Tony mentioned is the cloudiness in the water, and heterotrophic bacteria will often, that's can often be an indication, not always, of heterotrophic bacteria that in the water.
So what do you do about those?
Well, if they're thriving... And the others, they may be out competing, the others for oxygen, they may be doing some various things going on. We need to understand why they're there, really. One thing, too, is that once you get the ammonia, you need to keep that ammonia at a certain level throughout the cycle. Now, the trick is, these bacteria, the first group of bacteria, because there are two groups that participate in this, you know, at least two groups that participate in the whole... nitrification process in the ammonia cycle. The first group causes the ammonia or ammonium, depending on the situation, to become nitrite. And only when they have done so can the second group of bacteria come and take that nitrite and turn it into nitrate, partly because the ammonia is too toxic to them. It can't exist in it.
So they can't live there yet.
At least they're inhibited in its presence, and so you've got that going on.
So Tony not having enough ammonia is saying that the bacteria that turn it into nitrite are not going to move in and start that? Is that the problem?
If the ammonia is not... You have to have a certain amount of ammonia pretty constantly, or the first group of bacteria will starve, and thus inhibiting the second group from growing.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's a little tricky. So you can, it's possible, if you don't keep the ammonia level stable, you start out with enough, bacteria move in, they start eating it, and then they die. And... so you don't have the whole cycle keep going unless you keep adding ammonia, and you add it in small amounts. But, you know, and he's added fish food too, which can be good for the trace nutrients. Of course, there's also a greater chance you'll get algae to go if you add fish food too, because then you're adding phosphorus and other, you know, nutrients that the algae go for. But it can be done with fish flakes. I've done it myself with fish flakes. Anyway, there's the possibility that maybe keeping the ammonia at a more constant level doesn't have to be up to four. I mean, 4 parts per million is good to dose it initially, but then maybe trying to keep it at 1 for quite a while until you build up and you notice every time you add it, it's gone, or, you know, within 24 hours or so. Then you know that the first part has gone, then you start reading for nitrites and see if they show up, and then eventually nitrates. So there's that. Since the tanks are sealed fairly tight, one way that the bacteria get in there is through, at least it's people say, it's through the air.
So do you think there's not enough of an entrance
It could
point?
Be there just aren't enough bacteria in there yet, and that could make it difficult. These bacteria also reproduce much less quickly than many bacteria. You know, a lot of bacteria can start reproducing within 20 minutes or so.
Mm-hmm.
These take about 8 hours. They split every 8 hours or so. So it takes longer than some bacteria. So that could be something going on. I would probably just take a bacterial additive. But Tony actually gave us a follow-up to this, we just talked about, by email.
He says, on your advice, I obtained and added Aquion water conditioner. It detoxifies ammonia along with heavy metals, chlorine, and chloramines, but I called their tech support line and verified that it won't cause problems with my fishless cycle. They say it only changes the ammonia to a non-toxic form, ammonium, which still feed the bacteria.
Yeah, still feed the beneficial bacteria. And that, yeah, most of the water conditioners that detoxify ammonia, in my understanding, do indeed change it to ammonium, which the bacteria can still use. So that makes sense. So hopefully that helps, Tony, and keep us updated on how that goes.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is about time for our break.
Okay.
Hello, this is Ken Jones of the Prince of Ponds and Pet Tech Podcasts, and you're listening to one of my favorites, the Aquarimax Show.
Now there are more ways than ever to be a part of Aquarimax. In addition to downloading the podcast on iTunes, you can follow us on Twitter, like our Facebook page, subscribe to our YouTube channel, or call us anytime and leave a phone message at 801-477-0629, or just email us at info@aquarimax.com. And now, back to the Aquarimax Audio Show, the podcast with Icy Now.
Okay, we are back from our break, and thank you, Tony, again. And now we're going to hear from Matthew, who I believe this is his first time contributing to the show.
I think so.
And he contacted us about his bristlenose placos. Yes?
Yes, indeed.
He says he's had his tank set up for a while, and he has one male and one female. There's quite a few fake plants and things, so he says it's not quite as viewable as he would like, but he has 4 slate caves. One of them is kind of towards the back of the tank, and he has 1 big piece of wood and some halves of coconut shells. But
he's also got a terracotta pot in there, doesn't he?
Oh, okay, yeah. But they don't seem to have bred yet, and he's wondering what else he should do.
Well, there are a couple of things that I would like to discover. First of all, do you have a confirmed pair? Because the first time I tried to breed placos some years ago, I put an immature male with a mature male. It didn't go over very well. In fact, the immature male leapt up through the spillway of the filter and ended up in the area with the filter cartridge in my hang-on-the-back filter. That's how well it went. So I pulled him out of there and put him in a different tank, and he was none the worse for wear. He did fine and had him for years after that, but the thing is, they didn't get along too well.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't work. So make sure you do have a female. Hopefully that's already something you've taken care of. But
and that, remind us very quickly again how to tell the difference.
Well, both of them can have bristles on their face, but only the male has bristles in a line right down the middle of his nose, so to speak.
Now, if somebody gets an immature male and they put it in with a mature male, mm-hmm. will the immature male still get those bristles on his face, or will he not because he's not the dominant fish?
The bristles will be inhibited. Their growth will be inhibited. In fact, if you put a male that has big bristles in with another male and they have a dominance battle, and the one that formerly had big bristles will lose the bristles to some extent. They won't disappear entirely, but they will reduce in size.
So the immature male, will he just get really little ones down the middle of his face, or will he get nothing? So how do you know?
There will still be something there. There will be bristles,
okay,
but they will be much shorter.
But females don't have them right down the middle of their
right
face.
Down the middle of their face. They may have them on the edges, down right by their mouth, but they won't have it right down the middle of the face. So that's okay. One thing to check. I wonder about the size of the tank, too. I mean, I would say the minimum, bare minimum for breeding bristlenoses is a 10-gallon tank. I don't know what size you got there. I have preferred 20 or larger myself for breeding them, but you could do it in a 10. It's good that you're providing a lot of different sizes and shapes of containers with the coconut shells and the slate caves and the terracotta pots and so on, because they are picky sometimes, and it's good to provide a variety, so that helps.
They like to have options.
They do. And they like to have things that are not very tall, I've noticed. They like things that they can sort of, I think the male, I've heard this, I don't know if this is true, but the male kind of likes to be able to herd the female in there and not have a way for her to escape until she's laid her eggs.
Cavemen fish.
Yeah, so something like that may help. But it seems like you probably have quite a variety, and of course, they will spawn in less than ideal conditions, too. It happens. So maybe that is not the issue here. I'm a bit puzzled. So maybe if you can provide us a few more bits of information in terms of the size of the aquarium, maybe tank mates, because it's possible that they are breeding in there and somebody's coming along and eating them, you know, before you notice.
Mm-hmm.
Like Carlos was mentioning that he took his out of his community tank because he had angelfish and swordtails in there, and definitely the angels would go after the little plecos before you even knew they were there, I'm sure. You'd be really lucky to see them before they were eaten. So if you do have tank mates in there of any kind, I would investigate that as a possibility too. And then the maturity. It is possible to have a male and a female and just have them not be mature enough to breed. They don't have to be
fish
very big to breed.
Yet.
You can have them breed at just about a couple of inches or so. They will, but sometimes. But in general, I've noticed they're a little bit bigger before they start breeding. So that could be an issue too. Once you've got them going, though, it's kind of hard to stop them. I mean, literally, since we started spawning ours, we've had little bristlies around, like, constantly.
They're cute.
They are.
So maybe he could just get back to us and give us a little bit more information.
Yeah, that could help.
So thank you for writing in, Matthew. And now you have some comments for us on your beta sorority tank, do you not?
I do. I just thought that I'd mention I've been keeping a beta sorority in a community tank, a 20-gallon tank. And it's been interesting to see that, you know, initially, a couple of months ago when I put this beta sorority together, I was a little worried because we only had four females, and the minimum is three. Most people agree the minimum to keep together with females is three, because if you keep two, one will be dominant, one will be subordinate, and the dominant one will harass the subordinate one to death,
mm-hmm.
basically. I was a little concerned about that, especially because some of them were of different sizes. One of them especially was quite small, but it seems to be working out just fine. They do exhibit some territoriality. They do flare at each other once in a while. They'll chase each other around a bit. But except for the initial fin nipping that was fairly minor, there hasn't been any damage, and they seem to be doing really well. It is in a community tank, so they share the tank with some guppies, some coolie loaches, and what else is in there? A couple of bristlenose plecos.
Do we still have the honey grammy?
There's not a honey grammy in there. There's a honey grammy
in
the other, other 10-gallon tank. This is a 20-gallon.
Right. Wrong tank, sorry.
But
there's so many, I get confused.
It seems to be working out just fine, and I'm glad to report that. Because the first one that we tried initially seemed to work out well, and then we found out that some of the females were actually late-developing males, and we had to sort of decommission the sorority, take some fish out, and so on. So it didn't quite work. But this one's working fine, and they are happy, and they're doing well in all the Daphnia that I'm... Now, I've reached the point where I have way more Daphnia than I know what to do with, because both of the buckets outside are producing like crazy. So I'm happy.
It's a happy state.
That. Yeah, it's a good place to be.
Did speaking of betas, did we kind of give folks a preview of our project, our possible project for this summer that we would probably also be documenting on here?
I'm not sure if we mentioned that, but...
Why don't we?
Our kids are interested in breeding betas. We were thinking of doing that as a summer project altogether, a family project, and having the kids do their getting their science project started, you know.
Because can I tell you how much I hate the science fair at school? They put it right after Christmas, so you don't really have time to do anything decent.
Unless you start months before.
Unless you start in, like, October.
So we're going to start in June.
It will be done before they go back to school, and then I will not hate life.
So we're thinking of doing that with the betas and have them all come up with a different research question relating to the breeding process.
Part of the process, yeah.
And documenting it and so on, so that should be fun.
We thought we might as well keep you guys all updated on the project while we do it.
Because we've never bred betas before, so... If we manage to pull that together this summer, we'll you know, keep you updated on that. And
we can hit Carlos up for some more advice.
Yeah, we're going to definitely listen to his podcast again. We'll probably have some things we want to ask him. So I think that's about it for this week. We do have some surprises coming up soon. We're going to be appearing on the Pet Tech podcast in the next couple of weeks. And so we'll let you know about that. We've got some other things in the works, too, that we'll let you know about a little later. But at any rate, may the fish
be with you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and or questions that may be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.